Are you finding it harder to stay on task? You know, buzzes and beeps and little pop-up notifications, and they keep tapping you on the shoulder all day long. Is this a lost cause?
You've got mail.
Or can we learn tricks to help navigate our jobs and reach busy, distracted decision makers? We'll be exploring that phenomenon in today's podcast and spending a little time with Maggie Jackson, author of the book Distracted, in this episode of the Local Marketing Trends Podcast.
Welcome to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, bringing you unique insights on the ever-changing world of local marketing from two of the industry's brightest analysts and forecasters, Corey Elliott and Gordon Burrell. Today's podcast is sponsored by Affinity X, the best and largest creator and executor of digital advertising solutions for leading ad agencies nationwide, and by The Media Audit, the most comprehensive local syndicated audience measurement in the country. And now, here are your hosts, Corey and Gordon.
Welcome into the Local Marketing Trends Podcast. I am Corey Elliott, standing in the shadow of my co-host, Mr. Gordon Burrell.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I was being distracted. Yeah. I was just distracted that somebody just came in the office. I'll get to you in a minute. No, sorry.
All right.
We're talking about being distracted.
Hold on. Let me turn this off. Hold on.
Oh, yeah. I got to put my phone on mute. Okay. You know, the funniest thing is when you're like, it used to be when you're in a theater and on the screen, you know, in the movie, a phone buzzes and everybody starts moving around to check their phone.
Right.
It's like, oh, is that me? Distracted. What a great and horrible topic.
Yeah, it is. And we've been there for a while, but it just seems like the distractions are speeding up. You know, the span of attention is becoming shorter and shorter and shorter. So the distractions are just pinging.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the book Distracted, so much so that I've incorporated into a lot of my own thinking and our own business practices, and asked Maggie Jackson, the author of the book, who we'll be hearing in a moment, to come speak at one of our conferences in New York a few years back. And it just filtered so much into my thinking, not so much as, oh, wow, look at this. Do you know the average person is interrupted every 3.5 minutes and half of them are self-interruptions, right? That's crazy. And we lose, I just read something out of the New York Times, a consultant named Ed Brown, we lose about 4 hours a day due to distractions. Yeah. And it's not just you're distracted talking to somebody for 4 hours. It's just all the stuff that goes into being distracted, getting back on task. And so you've got all of that. And the question is, so what? Okay, yeah, we'll talk about a number of those weird little distractions. But toward the end of this, Corey, I do really want to get to the issue of, okay, so how do we use this information? What's so useful about it? And it's been around a while. We've been dealing with it for a long time.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember sitting back in Phoenix back in 2006 when I was sitting in a newspaper there, and the NAA, Newspaper Association of America, actually came out with a promo called Newspapers, a Destination, Not a Distraction.
So the average time at the time, I believe, spent with newspapers was probably 18 minutes. It's down to 12 actually now, probably due to the level of content that is not there anymore.
Right.
But there's a quality 12 minutes. Meanwhile, you know, it's not a fair assessment because the time spent with television, for instance, might be 4 hours. And times is probably more than that now.
Well, and that and the cross-media stuff. I mean, now it's just you're not sitting there watching television because you're sitting there watching television. You got the iPad over here. You got the phone over here. It's we're distracting ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, we watch television. We have caller ID on the screen. So as we're watching TV, not only do you hear the phone ringing, but you see the number up on the screen 3/4 of the time. It's a telemarketer. But you know, there's a distraction from your show, whatever you're watching. But it's just become so phenomenal. We're even seeing it in video. Video used to be, oh, I'm going to relax and disconnect and watch an hour and a half, you know, of a movie or 2 hours or a half hour television show. But we're now down to, I think I saw there are 6 video platforms, social media video platforms that are using videos of anywhere from 10 seconds to 60 seconds, 1 minute. TikTok, Instagram has a new one called Reels. Snapchat, I think, is one, YouTube Shorts, et cetera, et cetera. And there's even one called Dubsmash, which is, I think Reddit owns it now. and it's 10 seconds to maybe up to a minute, and it's dubbed over songs. So you could pick a song, you know, pick a Beyonce song or gangster rap. That's my favorite, you know, play it in the background and have me with my hat on sideways singing it, you know.
Yeah, oh, geez.
And then share it with all my friends.
All four of them. But, I mean, so many of these platforms are built on distraction, right? That's their game. That's what they have to do. They have to get you distracted and keep you there. But these are all great subjects that Maggie covers. And I think, Mr. Burrell, we should get to that interview right now.
Okay, our guest is Maggie Jackson, who holds degrees from Yale and the London School of Economics, and who started out her career as an Associated Press reporter and columnist for the Boston Globe, then went on to become an award-winning author whose essays, commentaries, and books were featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, NPR, elsewhere. The New Yorker called her influential, and I can attest to that. Her 2008 book, Distracted, left such an impression on me, as I had mentioned, that I asked her to speak at our conference in New York in 2016. Now, Distracted is out in a fully updated new edition, and its message is more relevant and more important than ever. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So good to be with you, Gordon.
Maggie, let's get started with your background first. Let's go way back to your childhood. Tell us about that, and also perhaps some early influences that led you to this fascination with how technology is impacting our lives.
Sure. Well, that is a great question. That gets me thinking a little. But I was always a very curious kid. I was always very interested in the world beyond the small town where I grew up in Massachusetts. Always very interested in new perspectives, you know, multiple. And I think I always felt like a little bit of an outsider, being adopted, you know, having a city soul in a small town, et cetera, et cetera. And so all that's to say, and later on, I went and worked abroad, which also is really great for giving you that 30,000 foot, you know, kind of view on your own world, your own country. But when portable technology came into our lives, and when I was a kid, I'll say there were, you know, the computer labs at school and people had computers, but really personal devices didn't accompany us everywhere. But when portable technologies came into our lives, I really, that sort of outsider view stood me well because I realized the world truly was going to be changed. I remember the minute, the day that someone walked into my college library when I was a student and a fellow student had a Walkman on. And I vividly remember thinking that, wow, public spaces aren't going to be the same. You know, private relationships aren't going to be the same. Our minds aren't going to be the same. So I've been following this for a very long time.
Yeah, as an observer, you had a very good background as an observer, which, of course, prepares you to be a reporter. And the reporter, of course, prepares you to write a great book like Distracted. So, you know, when I first started reading the first edition of the book, I started earmarking pages and jotting down some stunning facts because I frankly wanted to steal them and use them in some of my presentations, which I did. And there were facts like, you know, people in a room where a TV is on look at or away from it up to 150 times an hour. That's a hell of a lot of distraction. Or the average worker remains on task for, what, 3 minutes before being interrupted? And I can certainly relate to that. And half of them are self-interruptions. So tell us, if you could, for the audience, three or four of the most fascinating or scary things you found in this research. And then I want to get to the application today, how we can actually use this in our lives. So some of the more fascinating things in your research.
Sure, yes. And there's so much because the research has, you know, exploded on how technology affects us. And that's really important. So, you know, first I'd start with one fact or research point that tells so much about the way our minds work. Once you're interrupted, it takes a half an hour on average to return fully to what you were doing before you were interrupted. So this could be an external interruption. It could be just a distracting thought. And that's amazing, remarkable. I mean, that really is, I think, incredible and yet very plausible if you think about it a little bit. And what that tells me about the way the mind works is that we're not robots. We're not, you know, we can't click an on and off switch to just sort of flip back into what we were doing. The mind needs to ramp up and ramp back down, even if you're doing something as simple as switching from addition or division. So, yeah, point one. Point two is this well-known fact, but very important, that just having a phone in the room or on the table makes people far less attentive, even if it's off, even if they're not looking at it, far less intelligent, and even they enjoy themselves less in that event. So that's incredible how powerful this device is. You know, when some researchers say, quote, when we turn to these devices, we learn and remember less from our experiences. So, you know, obviously these devices work for us, but we have to be aware of the boundary conditions. Third is a good news point. You know, one of the points I'd say is that putting away our phone, we begin to bolster our mind in surprising ways in very short increments. We don't have to sort of throw the phone away. Obviously, we want to live with it. We do live with it. But for instance, just one example from my recent research, trying to remember something. Now, whoever does that anymore, of course, we Google it. You know, it's so passe to try to think back in your memory, remember a word or a name or a face. But when you do that, you're actually walking your mind. When you're trying to remember something, you're walking back through the corridors of your memory. And even if you don't immediately come to what you are trying to look for, to remember, you're actually strengthening your mind and your knowledge networks in so many ways. You're strengthening the neural connections between pieces of information. An example is you're trying to remember the name of that potential client that you met at the networking event a week or so ago. Can't remember that fellow's name, but you might remember somebody else at that event. And then you begin to see the connections between different people in your network in ways that you didn't before. You didn't actually find the client's name at the tip of your fingers, but you came up with, you strengthened your mind. So I think that's a really, really important point. Memory isn't clickable.
So do these mind games that you see, these apps, you know, do they actually work?
Well, most apps and most learning training online features only train you basically for what you're doing in that game. They're not transferable for the most part. So if you're doing something in that game related to, you know, X, Y, finding the rabbit on the screen or whatever, you're going to get better at finding the rabbit on the screen. But what I'm talking about is really utilizing our memory in ways that don't feel as though it's perfectly productive, but are. And that speaks to the mysteries of the mind and how we aren't machines. One of the most toxic and passe analogies related to the mind is that the mind is a computer. We've got to get rid of that metaphor. It isn't true. No cognitive scientist would adhere to that now. And we have sort of more, as you'd think, you know, organic mental capacities. And that really is important to understand.
I just get the feeling any game that we play with a robot, they're just going to beat us anyway. So,
no, only at certain things. Now, they're not going to beat us, Gordon. No.
Okay. Okay, Maggie, we're going to have to stop for a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. I've got some more burning questions for you right after this.
Affinity X is a trusted partner among leading digital marketing agencies. They can help you retain and grow your customer base with a complete product and service solution. Turn fixed costs into variable cost with a trusted outsourced partner. Scale your business with quicker turn times and flawless delivery. Reduced costs and improved margins. Affinity X is unmatched in experience, solutions, and technology that drives results. They can help your agency thrive in the increasingly competitive digital marketing landscape. Visit them at affinityx.com to learn more.
Celebrating 50 years of experience, the Media Audit provides advertisers, agencies, and media companies with consumer insights in more than 80 markets. The Media Audit provides you with an edge in a highly competitive marketplace, helping you quantify customer trends by tying them to what's happening in your market. Learn more and schedule a demo. Visit themediaaudit.com. That's themediaaudit.com.
I want to get to this path forward. I don't want to go and, oh gosh, look at all these people. These people, as you say, driving like they're drunk because they're texting, and kids that never look up because they're always on their phones. But I want to talk about the path forward. But you were kind enough to send me the second printing last month, which for me immediately overrode a book that I had been reading called 2030. It was about how today's trends will
ostensibly reshape the future of everything, which I found to be fascinating. But I put that down. I picked up the book that you sent me. Thank you very much. But so more than a decade later now, you're going just a bit further by offering some answers or this path forward. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, the first caveat or preface I'd say to that is that nothing is zero sum here. You know, it's not that we're distracted and life is going to, you know, heck in a handbasket, so to speak. It's not that we want to be monastically focused and that's just, that would be rigid. That's not tenable, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm talking about is adding counterpoints to lives of speed and, you know, brevity, et cetera, and pushing back on distraction. Distraction is a place. We want, when I'm on the internet doing research, I'm hip hopping around all over the place. I'm sometimes looking for serendipitous links, just as I used to sort of trawl the stacks in the library a long time ago. So that's important. We're sort of counterbalancing one tempo, one speed, one idea of success. And so it's really important to stress and recognize the long-term costs that we now know about to particularly splintering and undermining our minds through multitasking. You know, the filtering, the memory, et cetera, the lack of awareness that people have when they're living that kind of life. But again, I'd have to underscore that small steps are very powerful when it comes to reactivating, rediscovering the slower, reflective moments in our lives. You know, some people meditate, and that's not for everybody. But I have to say, the research shows that just a few minutes a day actually causes structural changes in our brain, making us more focused and calm. I've tried it in the last couple of years. And when I don't do it for a day, I really miss it, actually. I'm more, you know, for one thing, I snap at my husband. but that's not for everyone. Other research shows that when you're, you know, wedded to the screen all day, as we are, particularly during the pandemic, taking a 1 or 2 minute tech break, you know, just as you might rest your eyes by looking out the window, rest your mind, allow it to process, reflect. If you take a 1 minute tech break, a few minutes tech break every half an hour or so, then you actually are bolstering your attention. Studies show this. Your attentional skills are, you know, able to be stronger. And also, I'd say that anytime we practice focus is great. We're strengthening neural mechanisms, the networks of attention that are so important, the foundational blocks to thinking, the brain's ability to focus, to be aware, and to manage and plan our attention. And the last thing I'd say about that is eat dessert first. So a lot of students, college students, a lot of people in the business world ask me about how to better control and manage their attention. And I'll say, well, you have to start small, first of all, and say you really do want to, you have a frazzling day and you're constantly connected, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe at the end of the day, you want to get back to reading a book. You haven't read a book in a year. Try 10 minutes of a book you really, really can't wait to read. I mean, don't try to train your attention at the office. Get the skills back a little bit and you'll find that you can utilize these skills. And then the last point I'd say is, don't forget that attention and distraction are environmental issues. We can talk about, you know, climate change, but our attentional capacity is also affected by our surroundings. You can take the Dalai Lama, for instance, and plonk him onto a mountaintop. He will be the super focused fellow. But at the same time, if you put him in the middle of a rush hour in Grand Central Station, he might have a little more trouble. He'll have to try harder. So curate your surroundings, declutter the environment, and you'll declutter your mind. You know, put the phone in the trunk if you really are, you know, thinking you're going to be that tempted all the time. Turn off, I turn off the little clock on the top of my laptop so that then time is what I make of it rather than I'm always checking the time. I'll set an alarm if I have a meeting or, you know, podcast with you or something like that. And then I can really get into the flow of what I'm doing. I don't, you know, I'm not interrupted by myself. I call these guidelines to preserve the integrity of the moment. And the last thing I'll say is that all of what I'm talking about is actually going to lower stress and frustration, because that is a part of being interrupted all the time. And what could be more important right now as we're all thinking about better mental well-being in and around the challenges of our world to, you know, tamp down on the stress and frustration? So these points can really help you just feel better.
I might be more of a fatalist here. I don't know if things are fixable. I think things are inevitable. We're just going to have more and more distractions, and our ability to manage them is going to be really, really challenged. So the question to you, last question, are things fixable really, or are we better served just kind of working with this trend and understanding and trying to find a way maybe to capitalize on it and to change our lives in a different way rather than trying to slow down the distractions?
Sure. No, that is such a great question. And it's really important to push down into the subtleties of what you're asking. No, I'm not saying we should, you know, try, as I mentioned before, to be all focused all the time. And thankfully, you know, technological type Silicon Valley people who read my book don't see that I'm any type of Luddite whatsoever. I'm not trying to go backwards. But at the same time, two points. One is we can't work with, i.e. give in to distraction. The costs are too high, the fragmentation, the splintering, et cetera. But point two, it is a very fast and brief and on point world. So we have to accommodate these wider trends. We have to develop attentional skills to thrive in this quick world. The laser sharp focus you need to attend to something, the selectivity in information, that's cognitive flexibility, really important. The ability to create on point wisdom. Now, all of this takes masterful attentional skills. You know, so is a sprinter, I'd say, any less of an athlete than a marathoner? No. Is a poet any less creative than a novelist? No. If we're going to adapt to brevity and speed, we're still going to have really important attentional skills. We're just going to use them differently. So your clients, you know, the listeners here, the teammates, you know, can only deliver spot on messages and advertising or communications if they know how to focus well. And your consumers on the consumption side can't learn from whatever it is you're advertising or trying to communicate if they can't focus on what the message is. So I think that, yes, we have to learn, we have to adapt, we have to say this is not the 19th century, of course. But at the same time, moving forward, we have to remember that without skills of attention, we are reactive, impulsive, shallow thinkers. But with the power of attention, and I've tried to outline numerous small ways in which we can strengthen these attentional skills, become attentional athletes, with those skills, we can be flexible, discerning, accurate, and we can meet the challenges of our day. Because it's great to be able to attend in 5 minutes chunks, but sometimes the challenges, you know, demand that you need to focus for an hour. Will we be ready for that? We need lots of arrows in our quiver, and that's really important going forward because the challenges are complex and fascinating.
Attentional athlete. I love that term. By the end of every day, I feel like I'm an attentional decathlon champion. It's just so difficult. Corey and I are going to talk in a few minutes about the implications of this and how to work with it. It's certainly a big challenge, Maggie, for a lot of the folks listening to this show who are trying to implement advertising and marketing campaigns and trying to get people's attention when it's like standing in Times Square trying to wonder what to look at. But Maggie Jackson, thank you very much again for participating in our webinar and for a fascinating interview. And everybody interested in the book, go buy it. It's on Amazon, Distracted. Just look up Maggie Jackson. Maggie, thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome. And look for the subtitle, Reclaiming Our Focus in a World of Lost Attention. That's the new edition. Thank you so much, Gordon. I really appreciate it. Fascinating conversation.
Thanks, Maggie.
Oh, are we back? Oh, sorry. I was a little distracted. Just kidding. Yeah, no, I really like Maggie quite a bit. And I love the idea that people, when their phone is there, they enjoy themselves less. I thought that was really funny.
It's got to be true.
Yeah.
You know, wife and I will try to watch something on TV at night, but more often than not, cell phone is there, the laptop is there, and yep. then everything gets shut down. And guess what? Can't sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so much better when you just do, we're trying to, you know, read books, physical books, not, you know, ebooks or anything like that. But it's just so difficult. But the question, you know, is, what do we do with this information? I'm going to give one idea. Maybe you can give a couple of others. But one thing we've learned, and this is just at Burrell Associates, is we're watching a lot of people pivot because of COVID and not do in-person conferences. So everybody's doing virtual conferences, right?
Right.
And webinars and things like that. And these freaking webinars are boring. They're an hour long. And, you know, people like, I'm impatient. You know, I was brought up by a very impatient mother and a Marine father. Move it, move it, move it. We'd go to a restaurant and there were three people in line waiting to be seated. My dad would leave. I mean, and I learned that. So here's what I learned. Start the webinar on time. All of our webinars start on time, not 30 seconds, not a minute late. End it on time. Don't do any more than 30 minutes and give them stuff rapid fire. Keep their attention and also give them checkpoints. Okay, we've got 10 minutes left. Okay, we've got 5 minutes left. We might go a minute over, but you know that's going to be it. So people know, we can stay on the line. So I think that's one way that we found, and attendance at our webinars and the ratings for our webinars. We ask everybody who attends the webinar if they want to download the deck to take a survey. You know, how do we do? Webinars are, you've seen them, Corey, they're through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's always shocking that when we do webinars or presentations for other people, we have 20 minutes and we give them 40 slides, they're shocked. They're like, there's no way you can get through this in 20 minutes. And we always do. And I think that's part of it too. You just keep going, moving fast, fast, fast.
Yeah, it's like if you watch video, the screens kind of jiggle around a little bit. It's not one hold on a frame. You know, they actually have a science of making the camera move a little bit. Next time you watch TV, watch the background, and you'll see that the camera is actually moving a little bit back and forth just to go, ooh, something's moving. I got to, you know, it keeps your attention. So keeping their attention is good. But Corey, you know, we also really want to talk about advertising and how it relates to advertising and marketing messages.
Yeah, exactly. I went back and looked at some of our old local advertising surveys from last year and the year before, and I was looking for the word distracted. I wanted to know if local advertisers say the word distracted, and I only found a couple, and it was about Facebook being less effective. These people thought Facebook was less effective, and when they asked why, or when we asked why, we had one restaurant guy say, I think people are generally bored with Facebook and use it to be distracted, not to be engaged. An agency said Facebook has become more competitive, more distractions, less organic performance for business pages. That's good, but it was kind of a dead end. But then I looked for the word clutter. And man alive, it was all over. Everybody was complaining about clutter.
Yeah, that makes sense. There are more and more people trying to cram commercials into TV spots and to put them all across a page somewhere and to interrupt you. And it's hard to break through that clutter. So if you listen to Maggie, she wants you to do yoga. If you listen to me, it's like, no, we're gonna roll with this. Let's get in the game.
Well, so, to be fair, she said meditation, not yoga.
Meditation, yoga, okay. Same thing. I don't do either. The distraction. I drink. That's how I cope with
good.
All this bullshit.
As long as you have healthy habits, Gordon, that's important.
A couple of things. This guy at Brown, who's an efficiency and workflow consultant, said that we should have mutual time lock agreements with people. Mm-hmm. Corey, you and I try to do that.
Yep.
Where we say, and I'm doing it currently this week, you know, hey, I'm on lockdown. Don't reach me via Slack. Don't call me. Don't do this or that. I really have to concentrate. Doesn't work all that well, but it's a mutual agreement and it's a great level of respect that you can have with coworkers. The other is be wary of time bandits. Corey, do you know any time bandits?
Yeah, I think I'm talking to one right now.
I just need a second.
Yeah,
20 minutes later, we're going, okay, this is good. Thanks. We'll talk to you later. So
like Gordon seconds. Gordon second equals about 20 minutes of my life.
So there are two ideas. Identify the time bandits and try to keep them at bay and have mutual time lock agreements. The other is the messaging itself, particularly marketing, advertising. Corey, I don't think that there's been a better time than I've known of that focus and creativity have been at their highest premium because of all this distraction.
Yeah. I mean, on the data side of things, we're getting better and better at targeting, no matter what the media, you know, that's there and that's very attractive. But then once you get down there, how do you gain people's attention? You know, once you know exactly who you're talking to, then it's all about the creative.
Yeah, I think it's incumbent on whoever is delivering the message. In a lot of cases, it's advertisers because they have the creative tools in front of them, the tools to be able to create, you know, even just a Word document, a flyer to put on a windshield, right, or post something on Facebook or use their iPhone to shoot a video. So they're actually doing the creation, but they don't have the skills. And I remember in the early days of advertising, going to an advertiser and saying, what would you like to put in this ad? And they basically say everything. You know, an hour later, you got, you know, the picture of the owner's, you know, husband or wife. You know, we'll put that in there too. And we have this new employee and let's do this and let's do that. Before you know it, you've got an ad that people go, oh, turn the page. So helping the advertiser understand and talking about distraction and how it actually creates an opportunity, clutter and distraction is an opportunity for you to get a focused message, very clear and very creative to the individual. Simple, clear, creative, like 20% off today only. That's not creative.
I was going to say, it's not very creative.
But it's focused. So what would you do to, you know, create a very creative message around that if people are not interested in 20% off? You know, it's more along the lines of, Bill went to this store and you wouldn't believe what happened next. Okay, that's getting there. It's not quite there. Yeah, right, but, right, you know, get the creative juices flowing for the advertisers. Help them understand their time spent is going to be very, very brief. If you go to Facebook, if you use Facebook and you're on an Android or an iPhone app, you can actually go, and you can only do this on the app, you can actually go to settings of security, and they have a section there that's time spent on Facebook. I think you might be surprised at the time that you spend on Facebook. It's much shorter, probably, than you think, but it feels like a long period of time. Why? Because you're doing, you know, so many things like that. You're cramming so much information into your brain. Tough, Corey, to get an advertising message out that's really clear and creates an action. So creativity, breaking through the clutter, so, so important.
And being simple, a simple message creatively delivered.
Yep. Well, I'm impressed that our cell phones didn't buzz or we didn't hear that knock, knock, knock on Slack from our colleague, Jim Brown, another time bandit. Huh?
But but I was distracted because my cat did jump on my lap. So there you go.
Yeah, so let's just kill the cat.
Yeah, jeez.
Not a cat fan. We'll probably hate mail for that one. Anyway, thank you, Corey. Appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you weren't too distracted. I hope this was entertaining as well as informative to you. Corey, thank you for your wonderful input.
And thank you, Gordon. I don't have any more time for you today.
Go forth and stay focused, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, sponsored by Affinity X and the Media Audit. If you have submissions or ideas for future shows, or if you'd like to be a guest, email the hosts at podcast@burrellassociates.com. Thanks for listening. And remember, market well.